It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we take a look at the Supreme Court's decision yesterday to fully implement President Trump's travel ban. The U.S. Supreme Court gave the Trump administration the green light to fully enforce its revised travel ban. That ruling came out yesterday. Meanwhile, lower courts are still considering challenges to that travel ban. The version that's in effect limits travel from North Korea, Venezuela, and six Muslim-majority countries. Shobha Sivaprasad Wadia is a professor of law at Penn State University and an expert in immigration law. She's also founder and director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic. She's with us now to take a closer look at the travel ban. Shobha, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back.
Well, this isn't the final word on this, Shobha, but what was the reasoning that the Supreme Court gave, if any, for this ruling?
Sure. So yesterday there were two identical orders that were issued by the Supreme Court, which effectively and temporarily allows Ban 3.0, or the third version of the ban, to go into full effect pending a decision on appeal at the appellate courts and a decision by the Supreme Court on whether it should hear the case, if at all. So there wasn't a real reasoning given by the Supreme Court beyond the fact that they felt that the cases were going to be heard on an expedited basis at the lower court level, and that for that reason, the Supreme Court could expect a decision soon. Those oral arguments in the lower courts are scheduled for this week. One is scheduled for tomorrow, Wednesday, in the Ninth Circuit, and the other is scheduled for Friday in the Fourth Circuit.
Now, with those injunctions lifted by the U.S. Supreme Court, on a practical level, what changes now?
It has a real impact, I believe, on the country-specific restrictions that are outlined in the third version of the ban. As you suggested in your opening, depending on where you are from, individuals from Chad, Iran, Libya, Syria, Somalia, Yemen are impacted, and to a lesser degree, those from Venezuela and North Korea. If I were to think about, you know, what this means on a practical level, there is a restriction on the ability for someone to obtain an immigrant visa or admission into the United States on a permanent basis if you're from most of these countries. In some cases, if you're seeking admission into the U.S. as a visitor or as a fiancé or as a student, you could be barred from being able to obtain a visa and travel to the United States.
One issue that's come up related to what you just said there was the idea of having a credible claim of a bona fide relationship with a person or entity in the United States. That was one of the limits, I guess, to the implementation. Where does that stand now?
Well, it's a little bit in a purgatory now. It's a concept, this bona fide relationship test, was first coined by the U.S. Supreme Court in conjunction with the second version of the ban, and it was later used by the Maryland Court and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals with respect to the third version of the ban. So how and if it will be used again in the future remains to be seen. But that was a limiting principle. Now we're seeing something more dramatic, at least in the short term, where the entirety of the third travel ban can go into effect. And keep in mind that the ban itself is indefinite. So unlike the first two versions of the ban, which had a further limiting principle of 90 days on the suspension of entry for certain nationals and 120 days on the suspension of admission for certain refugees, this third version is even more dramatic in its terms because of the fact that it's indefinite and because it clearly prohibits admission of certain immigrants based on where they're from.
Now, this was the third version, as you mentioned, and I had thought that the subsequent versions after the original were supposed to sort of nerf the travel ban, soften it to pass court muster. It sounds like that getting rid of that time limit makes it a more stringent thing. So are there things that were softened to make this more agreeable to courts?
Well, I suppose it depends on who you might ask. My own opinion is the third version of this ban is more of the same. And we heard from at least one of the courts, the Hawaii court, in September, where the judge stated that the third version of the ban suffers from the same maladies as its predecessor. So, whether or not this version will pass court muster remains to be seen. One thing that did not happen yesterday in the Supreme Court orders is that we did not reach any conclusion on the merits of the ban. So the Supreme Court did not make a decision on its legality. The challenges to the third version have been wide-ranging. So in the Hawaii and Maryland courts, portions of the ban were struck down for either constitutional or statutory reasons or both. So some of the strong constitutional conclusions by the courts were that the ban would likely violate the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And some of the strongest statutory conclusions were that this third version of the ban violates the immigration statute by discriminating people based on nationality when it comes to the issuance of visas. It's worth noting that the constitutional and statutory arguments have been successful with all three versions of the ban. So regardless of how they've been drawn, thus far we are seeing very similar legal challenges being brought by the plaintiffs and very similar outcomes, at least by the lower courts.
Shobha Sivaprasad-Wadia is with us. She's a professor of law at Penn State University and an expert in immigration law. We're looking at the Supreme Court decision yesterday to let the latest version of the travel ban go into full effect. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're looking at the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to fully implement the travel ban, even as lower courts plan to hear other challenges to it. Shobha Sivaprasad-Wadia is with us. She's a law professor at Penn State University and an expert in immigration law. You can join in with your thoughts on this issue, on the travel ban, or your questions for our guest. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Shobha, these cases are in a couple different lower courts, as you were talking to earlier. Is this all going to end up back at the U.S. Supreme Court again?
The jury is out on that question, literally and figuratively. We'll hear oral arguments in the Ninth and Fourth Circuit Courts of Appeals this week. Meanwhile, the government has also filed a petition for cert with the Supreme Court, asking it to hear the cases there. There's a strong likelihood that whoever loses at the appellate courts are going to want to have this case heard at the U.S. Supreme Court.
7 of 9 Supreme Court justices supported lifting the injunction allowing the travel ban to go into effect. Is that really a tea leaf, though? Does that mean they're going to support the order, the executive order, when it comes, if and when it comes their way?
Seems to be the million-dollar question in this last 24 hours. The two justices that would have denied the application or disagreed with the ruling yesterday were Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor. I think it's really hard to tell. What we did not receive yesterday from the Supreme Court was insight or analysis on the merits or the legality of the third version of this ban. It could be that proponents of the ban see yesterday as a victory or the providing a stronger likelihood of success on the merits. But I'm really not so sure. And part of it has to do, I think, with how strong I believe the legal arguments are, especially the statutory ones.
Let's get into these arguments a little more. One of the arguments is more the constitutional one, I guess, the question of does travel ban equal Muslim ban, as had been talked about during the presidential campaign. People refer to the president's statements as a candidate, his tweets as a candidate and president as evidence that this travel ban is really based on religion. Is that one of the issues that people are arguing here?
Yes, and that was the focus of the Maryland court in explaining that the plaintiffs would likely succeed on this Establishment Clause claim. The court really relied on statements that were made by the president prior to the executive orders and also earlier. So from the beginning, the repeated statements that expressed in unequivocal terms the idea of a Muslim ban played a role in the conclusion by Maryland that the third version would likely violate the Establishment Clause. Contrast that to the Hawaii court, where the focus seemed to be more on the immigration statute. There are a couple sections of the Immigration and Nationality Act that the president or administration relied upon in drawing the third version of the ban. And one section is Section 212F, and that's a section that gives the president the authority to suspend the entry of an alien or any class of aliens where such entry would be detrimental to the interests of the United States. But the Hawaii court said, wait a minute, this is a section that does exist and there's authority that the president has, but it's not unlimited. And we have to look at the statute as a whole, and it cannot discriminate or violate other parts of the statute. So another part of the statute is very clear that you cannot discriminate based on nationality when issuing immigrant visas. And that is precisely what the third version of this ban does, said the Hawaii court, and says myself.
And is this something that Congress could step in on, clarify those statutes, and maybe solve at least one half of the argument here?
Maybe. Whether Congress is going to make a significant change to these sections, that's unclear. So the non-discrimination clause that is connected to the issuance of immigrant visas, that was enacted in 1965, and it was in tandem with the rid of the national origin quotas. So there was a strong intent and legislative purpose to have a statute that does not draw lines along nationality or have quotas based on where you're from. And so to uproot the principle that is behind the non-discrimination clause, for example, would be pretty dramatic.
Shoba, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Shoba Sivaprasad-Wadia is professor of law at Penn State University. She joined us to look at the Supreme Court's decision to let the latest version of the travel ban to go into full effect while waiting for lower court decisions.